90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. First and foremost, happy Thanksgiving. It's a time for families. It's a time for holidays. It's a time for getting together and seeing each other. But also, it's a time of the year where sometimes people get depressed and they think that they're the only one, and they're really not. And it can lead to some very serious consequences. Today, our guest is Lindsay Doolittle, and she is an elementary school teacher. She's an author. And she's a mental health advocate and suicide prevention activist in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Lindsay. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your story. About you're now a member of SAS, which stands for?
Suicide Awareness Survivor Support.
And what happened to get you involved in SAS and the tragic event in your life?
On April 22nd of 2015, my late husband, Brett Doolittle, he ended his life. It was 3 days before his 35th birthday.
So was it depression, or were there warning signs and things that you may have seen that you look back on hindsight that you didn't kind of get the significance of what was going on?
My husband was, he was never diagnosed, but he was very fearful of being labeled clinically depressed. And I did, now in hindsight, I know the warning signs, and I made a list of them, if you'd like me to go through them.
Sure.
Some of the first warning signs that I saw in my late husband were he was drinking more. I also noticed that he was drinking while on prescription meds. He was eating less and had insomnia, so his sleeping habits were kind of all over the place. He was becoming more irritable and yelling at the weirdest things that I was so confused at. He was losing interest in activities that like going to the movies or going out to eat or traveling. He just seemed to lose interest over the last 3 years of his life. He became more aggressive in his behavior. He was looking and reading morbid material. I found after he died, like I counted all the books up, that he had 17 books on Hitler that I wasn't quite sure why he had all these books. I knew he liked reading about history, but he had an abundant on Hitler. He became really secretive, his whereabouts. He wouldn't talk about his day. His behavior was becoming more reckless, and he was as a sergeant for the Kansas City, Kansas Police Department, he was stealing right in front of me in, like, the grocery stores. It wasn't like we didn't have the money, but he was stealing. He attempted suicide as well 4 months prior to his death. And me not knowing the warning signs, I thought the night that he attempted that it was because he was really drunk and really sorry and really upset for something he had done. And when he attempted, I stopped him, and I told his best friend, and I told my best friend, but that was it. I didn't tell anybody else. I didn't call the police. I didn't think that they would believe me. I didn't want him to get in trouble. He felt like a burden, and he started crying uncontrollably about a week prior to his death, and he started tying up loose ends. Again, this is all in hindsight. I had no idea what he was doing. I found out that he paid off all our debt. He had taken out a huge loan, and he had become really secretive about our bank accounts, and I wasn't allowed access. And until after he died that I found out that he had paid off all of our debt. And he had also been giving away possessions of his, and he left me his wedding ring. And they say that they give away their most prized possessions. But Brett, since the beginning that I've known him, I known him since I was 15, back in 1998. And I would say that Brett's life, it was like a roller coaster of emotions since the time I ever met him. And he was so talented and creative at everything he did. He just didn't think he was good enough. And he was an artist, and he would throw away his artworks, these beautiful artworks. He would just throw them away and say they weren't good enough. He was so talented on guitar, and he was also a bagpiper for the Honor Guard, but he didn't think that he was ever good enough. He didn't think he played well, and it just wasn't true. And I found out after he had died as well, there was some family secrets that he had been molested by his first stepdad that he never even told me about. And I mean, we were together for 17 years, and he never once told me about this first stepdad that he had. But he did tell me before he died that he always thought he was a mistake.
That's not a way that you really want to go through life. That's really kind of, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. So go back to something you said. You know, sometimes people think that they're doing the right thing not by telling somebody what's going on, but that's really, it's more of a cry for help. If I'm understanding everything that was going on, it was a cry for help. But a lot of us don't know how to help when we see in that situation. What are some things that loved ones, family members, those around somebody that they see these signs can do?
Ask them, are you thinking about ending your life? I wouldn't ask them, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Because in their minds, they're not going to hurt themselves. They're going to be at peace. And so I would ask them and use those words, are you thinking about ending your life? Are you thinking about killing yourself? And talking about it, because I think that's the big stigma that we need to put to rest, is if you talk about it, we're not putting it in their heads. If you talk about it, it's going to help. The silence is what is really damaging.
So as you can ask them questions, are the organizations that you all may work with at SAS to help, because they're thinking that they're helping themselves, but they're not thinking about the loved ones that may will be left behind during this situation. Are the organizations that can help people actually get the help that they really need?
Yes. If you go on to the AFSP website, the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, it even shows you there's places, if you think that you know someone who's going to attempt, or you know that they have attempted. There's all different kinds of resources on there, like getting them help, taking them to a counselor, or taking them to the hospital, to a mental health facility. After Brett died, I thought about ending my life, and that is a natural a reaction after somebody has ended their life that's so close to you. And I had thought about ending my life, and so the first thing I had to do was get myself some help.
Okay.
And so I went So I ended up going to see a therapist. And the first thing that the therapist had was 69 questions asking about myself. And there was one question about, are you thinking about ending your life? Well, I left that one blank. And when I came back to her, she asked me if I had answered all the questions before we could start counseling. And I said, yes, but I didn't answer one of them. And she looked at the paper and she said, oh, so are you thinking about ending your life? You know, you left this one blank. And for me, I thought she's going to have me committed into a hospital. I thought she was going to have me taken away from my job. I thought that I was not going to be able to get out of a hospital or a mental health ward. And that was just me and my stigma of thinking, if I talk about it, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. And I told her, yes, I was thinking about ending my life. And she, I asked her if she was going to take me away to a hospital, and she said no. You know, if we did that to every single person that was thinking about ending their life, we would have too many people in hospitals. And so it kind of freed me to know that I could talk about it then with my therapist.
So you were able to talk about it with her, and then she was able to maybe give you help and suggestions on different things on why you shouldn't end your life and help you get over that patch that you were going through at that time?
Yes, and she helped me process what had happened with my late husband. But I would say not only therapy helped me, but it was 3 weeks after Brett had ended his life we didn't have children. I had my family, but I felt like I couldn't talk with them about it. And I knew I was in a really bad place, and that's when I started going to SAS, the Suicide Awareness Survivor Support. And it is an amazing not-for-profit organization. It's a place where suicide survivors who've experienced a loss, that they can unite and they can share their pain. It's a safe place to share your pain. Bonnie and Mickey Swade started this 14 years ago after their son Brett ended his life. And they were the ones who educated me that it wasn't my fault, because as soon as Brett died, I thought it was my fault. I blame myself. And that's a social stigma that I think we all put on ourselves, that we have to blame somebody else for somebody else's death. And SAS was the one that told me that this is not your fault, that they were very ill, that suicide is a mental illness. Depression is a mental illness. And I was able to share my story, and I was able to get past the woulda, coulda, shouldas, because I played that game a whole lot. I mean, I was completely consumed with blaming myself and Brett's death. And I wasn't the only one. The Kansas City, Kansas Police Department in the official report also blamed marital issues for Brett's death. And that was so devastating to me. And that's why I chose to not sweep this under the rug and stay above the rug and start talking about it and trying to be as transparent as possible. Because after Brett killed himself, you know, I wanted to kill myself. I felt worthless. I felt hopeless. I was shocked. I had so much hurt inside of me. Like I said, I was consumed all day long with his death. I was diagnosed with PTSD. I was diagnosed with clinical depression. I was diagnosed with severe grief spurts as well. And I want to be able to be there for the ones who've lost somebody who are blaming themselves right now. And I want to be there for also the people that are thinking about ending their lives because they think that they're doing everybody else a favor, which they are not. They think that they're a burden and that they're going to take care of the problem by taking themselves out of the equation. But everybody around them is affected so deeply. And it's not for just a couple of months or a couple of years. It is forever. We are affected forever by their deaths, because suicide is different than just a physical illness of somebody who dies by that, or a homicide. Suicide is different because it is the person who murdered your loved one is your loved one, and you are left with all these questions, and there's so many emotional repercussions. And I think people at that point, they're so mentally ill, they're thinking irrationally. They really do think that they're doing everybody else a favor, and I want them to know that they're not.
We'll go back to, you talked on that test a little bit earlier. Some of the research that did risk factors for suicide, researchers found that 90% of individuals who die by suicide experience mental illness. A number of these things that may put a person at suicide risk include a family history of suicide, substance abuse, drugs and alcohol can result in mental highs and lows that exacerbate suicide thoughts. Intoxication, more than 1 in 3 people who die from suicide are found to be currently under the influence. Access to firearms, a serious or chronic medical illness, gender, although more women than men attempt suicide, men are 4 times more likely to die by suicide. A history of abuse or trauma, prolonged stress, isolation, age, people under 24 and those above 65 are at a higher risk for suicide, a recent tragedy or loss, agitation and sleep deprivation. So those are some of the risk factors for suicide. And to go back to something that Lindsay touched on, mental health professionals are trained to help a person understand their feelings and can improve mental wellness and resiliency. Depending on their training, they can provide effective ways to help. So it's not a stigma of going to someone and saying that I've had these thoughts. It's actually a sign of strength, because you're getting the resources that you need to get yourself better.
Yes.
So, and being retired military, I know the stress that police officers, firefighters, people in the military. I was exposed to it when I was in the military, and we had an individual who was going through a divorce. He was despondent over his job, and he called his wife. They were going through a separation, and he told her that he was going to commit suicide, and her thoughts to her, her worst him was, well, go ahead and do it. And the next thing she heard was a gunshot. He killed himself. So sometimes when people are saying that they're going to do that, it's a cry for help. And a lot of people may not know where to turn, but I know here in Kansas City we have specially trained officers, crisis intervention team officers, who can help. So if you know someone that is in a situation and you don't know what to do, call 911 and say, I need somebody who's crisis intervention trained to come out, can be a first step.
Mm-hmm.
But also contact, as Lindsay said, there's a National Suicide Awareness Prevention Hotline. There are SAS, there's many organizations that can help you, because you said the person that you leave behind does a lot of struggling in the things that what I could have did, what I should have did, you know, and helping to save their loved one's life. And as we look back this year, you know, there was a young lady at Lee Summit High School. She waited until school started, and she went into the bathroom and shot herself. There are many cases where you don't know what someone's going through, that a kind word, a simple gesture can be the difference in between that person taking their life and not taking their life.
Yes.
So with SAS, how does someone get to know about SAS if their loved one has committed suicide? Is it something that they're given by people at the hospital or the research to help them cope with that situation?
I would say the only thing that the Kansas City, Kansas Police Department helped me with was when they gave me that pamphlet for SAS. And so one of the liaisons from the police department gave me that. And when I first went to SAS, that it was incredibly difficult to go in by myself. And I know that there's some people that come in with their friends to SAS to help a friend out who's experienced a suicide loss. And But I went in, and I haven't stopped going. I go, they hold the Shawnee Mission one twice a month, and I also go to the one on St. Luke's Hospital. I go to that one once a month. And they have like 9 different ones across the metro. And they're all on the SAS Spokane website that people can go and see and search for different support groups, because I know they have one in the Northland. They have a couple in the metro. I think they have one out in Lawrence. And they keep expanding. You know, it's good that people are getting help, but it's so unfortunate that this is continuing, that we do need this help. We call it the club that no one wants to be a part of.
That is so true. And that website, for those that may be interested, is SASS-MOKAN.com. And that stands for Suicide Awareness Survivor Support. And that's Missouri and Kansas area. So it's the club that nobody wants to join, that everybody needs to know about so that they can help someone in their life or someone that may be struggling with that. So, as they go, you may go through MOKAN, some of the other organizations. What are some of the things that people can do who have been they've been touched by suicide in their life to help them if they're not ready for counseling, if they're not ready to, you know, step out? What are some of the things they can begin to do to help themselves get to those next steps?
Talk about it. Don't sweep it under the rug. For me, I mean, everyone is different on their grief journey, but for me, talking about it helped me, because I felt like I didn't have a voice when Brett was alive. I kept everything a secret. Even when we went to marriage counseling towards the end of his life, I didn't even tell the marriage counselor that he had attempted on his life. I was so scared. And after he died, I felt like I did have a voice. And that's when I started to speak out. And as I've continued to speak out, that has helped me. When I feel like if I can try to help others, that helps me. I think something else that people need to do after they've been touched by suicide, I would not keep any alcohol in your house. Because you do anything you can to numb your pain. And seeking a therapist as well, that helped me so much. Because talking in a group is one thing, which is really great to hear the common threads in everyone's stories and to know that I'm not alone. But then just for my own personal things that I needed to get out, that I couldn't get out in an hour and a half in group therapy, because it's not group therapy, it's group support, but I needed to have that one-on-one time with the counselor, so that really helped me. And surrounding myself with my family and friends and not isolating myself, that as well helped me. And I would say I hated writing before Brett died, but after Brett died, I started to write. And I just would write all the time in my journal. But it was one night, it was after midnight, I woke up in a panic, and I started to write a children's book. I wrote it in 20 minutes. Because after Brett died, he didn't just hurt me. He hurt so many people. I mean, he hurt an entire police department. He hurt his mom and his stepdad. He hurt my family when he left behind his nieces and nephews. And my elementary students at the school, they wanted to know also what happened to Officer Doolittle, who came to have lunch with me, you know, and I didn't know what to say to them. And I didn't want to lie. I didn't want to say he died of cancer. I didn't want to say he just passed away. I wanted to make sure to tell the truth, but, you know, how do you do that with little ones? And so I wrote this children's book, and it's called Goodnight, Mr. Vincent Van Gogh. And in the book, I relate it all back to Vincent van Gogh because, you know, we talk about in school, in the curriculum that we teach about Starry Night and the sunflowers he painted. We'd say, you know, this is a really pretty picture, but we need to start talking about why did he paint this really pretty picture? Where was he when he painted this really pretty picture? Because those are really significant things that we could be talking about with our young ones, because I think that we're starting to talk about it more in the high schools and maybe the middle schools, but some of them, it's too late for them when they get to the middle school and the high schools. They feel in their minds that it's too late. And there are children under the age of 10 who are ending their lives. And I don't think that this is something we should just be talking about in the secondary grade level. This is something we need to be talking about in the elementary level, where we can talk about depression. You know, Vincent van Gogh had depression, and he was very ill, and he went to the hospital one night, and that's when he saw and looked out his window that image of Starry Night. You know, we could be talking about that with our little ones, and so that way they can develop a language and be able to speak up about feelings they don't understand inside of themselves.
And that is definitely a good point. If you have any questions for Mr. Little, you can call our studio line at 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. You know, having been a parent, having served on the school advisory committee and on the school board here in Kansas City, when children get to middle school, they're going through so many different things that they're the hardest on themselves. And you are correct. It's creating that dialogue when they're in kindergarten, first grade. You know, one of the things I used to do with my children when they were young was to sit and, you know, ask them how their day was, let them know that I cared. And, you know, it's a lot of children who don't get that. So when you're beginning to, how do you begin to have that conversation with someone, with a child who can't really tell you how they feel, to, you know, help them understand that it's okay, it's all right?
I think also, like, if we start, something that SAS taught me, when you go to SAS, they educate you on the language. We could even just be changing our language. I mean, in the very beginning, you know, I would say that Brett committed suicide, but the word committed has a negative connotation to it. And my husband didn't commit a crime. And I think even just by changing our language, because when people hear committed, it's like they've done this really shameful, bad thing. And I think it makes people not want to talk about it and sweep that under the rug. And so if we maybe even start changing our language and saying, you know, people who end their life or they died by depression, that can even help with the little ones, and talking about it, and, you know, that we can approach our children. I know it's a very difficult topic to talk about with kids, and we want to protect our kids, and we feel like if we don't talk about something like that, that we're helping and we're protecting, when really we're continuing that vicious cycle, that stigma. And that's why my book, it's not just me that was a part of this. I have in the book, every single illustration was created by someone who's lost somebody to suicide. And I have every demographic in there. I have a young lady that lost her father, and she was one of my students in fifth grade. I have a father that lost his son, mother that lost their son, a dad that lost his daughter, a granddaughter who lost her grandmother, a husband that lost his wife. It's not something that is just one demographic. It touches every religion, ethnicity, race, sexuality. It doesn't discriminate. So if we just start talking about those kinds of words like depression with our kids, that it's okay to talk about those feelings and to speak up when they don't understand about some of those feelings, or maybe even giving some coping strategies when kids are having different feelings. I think that would help.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. This is Bill Sundahl, your friendly neighborhood development director. I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who helped out and kept the Stockyards Brewing Company KKFI Fall 2017 Band Auction on the rails. And we raised over $9,000 to keep KKFI running. Thank you so much to all of our artists who participated, all of the sound engineers, the DJs and programmers, our phone volunteers. A special shout out to our bidders who did not win. Thank you very much. Maybe next time is your time. And another special thanks to Stockyards Brewing Company for sponsoring the band auction. We'll be doing it again in the spring. Thank you so much from all of us here at KKFI.
Did you know you can support any or all shows on KKFI by becoming an underwriter? Here we are by the numbers. 100,000 watts within an 80-mile radius of KC, including over 2 million people. Streaming 24/7 with over 10,000 listeners online. Podcast averaging 3,500 monthly downloads. KKFI.org averages 30,000 monthly impressions and over 18,000 followers on social media. To learn more, go to kkfi.org/underwriting.
Hello, we're back. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. If you have any questions or you'd like to talk to our caller, please give our studio number a call, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So when you're working with children, trying to explain to them, some people will say, well, it's best to try to hide it from them and not to tell them. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that when we stay silent and we don't talk about it, that it continues that stigma. And then children will start to grow up thinking that we can't talk about it and I shouldn't talk about it. And they can get themselves into some really deep hurts and some deep trouble and some everlasting hurt on their family members that are left behind after they make their final decision. You know, I hear that I read a really great article on the on suicide with the people of 9/11 who jumped the towers, how they jumped the towers because they were escaping the flames. And it's our loved ones who are dying by suicide that are escaping the flames in their minds. And before it gets to that point, we need to be able to speak up and speak out and ask for help and know that it's okay to ask for help.
So if you are thinking about it or struggling, don't stay quiet. Don't stay silent. Silence equals compliance. You know, talk to a friend, talk to a neighbor, talk to a loved one, talk to a coworker, talk to your spouse. But talk to somebody and let them know, because it is something that you can be helped with, and it's not something that people should suffer alone with. As you talk about your book, Good Night, Mr. Vincent Van Gogh, did it help you? How did it help you in writing the book and also getting that message out to others?
It helped me with talking with my students about it. It gave me a starting point. It also gave me purpose, because I was so lost after Brett died, and I felt so worthless, and I felt like there was no hope for me. And it wasn't just the book that helped me. I mean, SAS and my family and my friends supporting me, that helped a great deal. But writing that book has been, I've been able to gain a voice. And I told myself I was going to take this tragedy and turn it into something good, but I didn't know what I was going to do. But sitting around the the table at the support group, and I hear so many people, they say, I don't know how I'm going to talk about this with my grandchildren, or I don't know how to talk about this with my son or my daughter. You know, what do I say? And when I was sitting around, I was saying the same thing. How am I going to talk about this with my students and my nieces and my nephews? And there is no books for children on this topic. There is absolutely no books on this topic except for, like, parents, how to explain it to your children. So there's books for adults to explain it to their children, but there's not one for kids. And so I bought a book on grief, and I gave that to my nieces and my nephews, but I thought there needs to be something more. And so that's why I wrote the book, Goodnight, Mr. Vincent van Gogh. And the Vincent van Gogh Museum in the Netherlands contacted me about a month and a half ago, because this book was just published this year. Just a couple of months ago it was released. And they found it on the Internet, and they asked for a copy to be placed in the Vincent van Gogh Library in the Netherlands, because they said it was an important message that also needed to be heard all the way into the Netherlands. And so I'm really honored that it's there. It's on permanent display there right now.
That is definitely great, because it tells why he was a great painter. It also begins to tell some of the things that he experienced in his life. You know, if we have a loved one that has thoughts of suicide, there are resources. You can call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 800-273-8255. And then you can go online to National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.org. There's the SAS website. And is there a telephone number for SAS if someone wanted to contact SAS if they've been touched by suicide or they may have need help with someone, you know, in this area, they don't know the next steps and they want to just really sit down and talk with someone?
Yes, actually, on the website, if they go under the support groups, if they look under support groups and the closest one to them, there's a phone number for each one, and they can call the facilitator. And we've had people that have come into the support group who have thought about ending their lives. They hadn't lost anybody to suicide, but they had they were thinking that they wanted to end their life, and they wanted to see a different perspective. And I thought that was amazing. And you know, to have people come in to see, what does it look like if I do leave my friends and my family, even though if they don't think that the people around them love them. I feel like they're at a point that they're just so sick. They're so sick with sadness. They're not thinking clearly. It's very irrational thinking, because when they end their lives, it doesn't. I think the number before was it touches one out of one suicide. It touches like six people. I think that number is now 24. But with my husband, it was like over 500, because he also touched a whole entire police force. So it's not just your family, it's your friends, it's your neighbors, it's your coworkers that are so devastated by your death.
We have a caller. So hold on. So, caller, are you
Hello?
There? Caller?
Yes, I'm on the air.
You're on the air. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
This is Raymond calling from Kansas City.
Yes, Raymond, go ahead. Can you tell us your comments or what you would like to ask, or Lindsay here?
I'd like to ask a question to the I didn't get her name, but I'd like to ask, has she had any contact or experience with Christ as her personal Savior through all this dilemma of suicide and depression and so forth?
Okay, well, we'll stop there. So he was saying he wanted to know if you had any experience with Jesus during this situation, with everything that you've went through.
I'm not a religious person, but I know that the people in my support group, there's a lot of them that struggle with their faith after their loved one has ended their life, because some of the different religions teach them that, you know, it's a sin to end your life. And I think of it more that we look at this instead of a sin, that this is a sickness, and where we don't blame people who've died by cancer. You know, we don't look at a mental illness the same like we do with a physical illness. And they're treated so differently, and that's what the stigma we're trying to break here. So I know that there are lots of people in my support group that struggle with that. I am not one. I feel that my husband, where he is right now, he's at peace. But we need to start looking at mental illness like we do with physical illnesses, and we need to start treating them more equal.
We were talking earlier about the number for SAS, and if you're looking for the local chapter of SAS, the number is 913-681-3050. That's 913-681-3050. You have your own website. You briefly touched on it earlier. You said, you know, the police department wanted to sweep some things under the rug, and yours is called Above the Rug. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
Yes, the website's www.abovetherug.com. It's my author website. It's a place where you can also find, if you want to order my book, it's on there. Part of the proceeds goes back to Suicide Awareness Survivor Support as well for each book that is purchased. And I have a blog on there as well that I talk about my different feelings from day to day, because no 2 days are the same. Even today I have different feelings inside of me. I feel pretty good right now because I've come a long way in my grief journey. I'll never get over Brett's death, but I do get through it. And currently I'm dating this wonderful man. I never thought that I was going to be, I never thought I would have love again in my life. And, I think about Brett on this day, and I think that about how far I have come. And so I just talk about on my blog all my different feelings since the aftermath of Brett.
So you're going to be sitting and working with some of the police departments. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And, you know, it's kind of ironic with everything that your husband was a police officer, and now you're working with some of the police departments. And can you tell us a little bit about that and how that is helping people?
Well, I haven't worked with the police department yet, but Marion Police Department is wanting me to come and speak at their wellness program to the officers, which that's awesome. I can't wait to work with the Marion Police Department and hopefully others in the future. I know I just had a speaking event at the University of St. Mary's and was able to talk with students and staff members. And I just talked recently with the U.S. Army for Fort Leavenworth that they were wanting me to come out and speak with the soldiers. And I think, again, the more voices we can have, because this is bigger than just my story, I think if people start speaking out and speaking up and saying that we can't be blaming people for other people's choices on ending their life, we need to start looking at this as a mental illness and looking more into their condition instead of blaming a catalyst. And hopefully we can start getting people the help that they deserve instead of people thinking that they have no other choice to end their life.
When you talk to the students, what was some of their response, some of their questions and their concerns that they may have had? Because I know there was probably somebody that you were speaking to that either thought about or may have been touched by suicide in some way.
With my students, I let them know that Officer Doolittle, my husband, died like Vincent Van Gogh, that they were very sick with sadness, that they ended their own life, and that if any of my students ever felt like they didn't ever want to be there anymore, that they could always come talk to me, to talk to an adult, talk to the nurse at the at our school, talk to their families, to, if they don't understand something inside of them, to speak up. And at that time, the kids didn't ask any more questions because they were, before I didn't say anything to the kids, they were asking me, Miss Doolittle, how did Mr. Doolittle die? And, you know, why were you gone for so long? And what happened to him? We heard that he died. And then I heard that they were making up stories too, that he had died in a fire. He had died in a fight. He got shot on the line of duty. And those were all incorrect. And so I wanted to make sure to be truthful and honest with them that he died just like Vincent Van Gogh, and he died by a mental illness.
So it's best to definitely tell them the truth, keep it above the rug and not sweep it underneath the rug.
Yes.
And talk with them and let them really know what's going on, because you may stop them from down the road doing that because they know that they're not feeling alone. It's not something that they should be ashamed of, but it's something they can actually get help with.
Yes, it's 100% preventable.
And that is, with it being the holidays, and, you know, a lot of people, I have a friend of mine, her mother passed away today, so it's always something that, you know, this time of year when it's the time for holidays and joy, for some people, it's not a time of holidays and joy. It's a time where they're struggling with something, and they may not think that others understand, but they need to know that others do understand. There is help, because life situations, life events, they shape us in many different ways. And, you know, from those serving our country to those serving our community, the things that they see, their actions every day can actually take a toll, and people can be afraid to say something. But know that you can get help, that others do care, and you don't need to suffer in silence, and definitely you don't need to suffer alone. So as we begin to close down, what are some things advice that you would give to someone who is feeling down or feeling depressed and like they have nowhere to turn?
I think, again, it's different for everyone, but I would say call up a friend, talk to your family. If you don't have family around, get on the phone and speak with them. Like you said, the 1-800 number for the suicide prevention line. If they are thinking that deep of thoughts of not wanting to be here anymore. I'd also like, if I can, say if you know somebody who has been touched by suicide and you don't know what to do for that person who has had that suicide loss in their family, what you can do is be there for them. And if you're struggling on what you should do, I think there's a lot of people that want to shy away because they have no clue what to say or do for that those people that are in that situation. But if you just be there for them, and, I mean, I had a neighbor who brought me a steak one time. That was, you know, what she did. She was able to cook me something. I had Brett's best friend who would come over and mow the lawn for me. You know, that's what he knew how to do, is how to help. So if it's like doing some laundry for somebody or just sitting and letting people talk, because sometimes all you need to do is just sit and listen. Because when I was in my darkest hours and my darkest times, it was so helpful that I could have my mother sit there with me and I could just tell her what I was feeling. Just to call up a friend, and I was able to tell them what I was feeling. I just needed them to listen to me. And I didn't need any advice. I just needed them to listen. And so if you could just sit and be a listening ear, even. Don't worry about making mistakes, because you're going to make them. Or whatever you say, you know, there's going to be times you're going to say maybe the wrong thing, and it's okay to say the wrong thing, but just be there for them and don't shy away and disappear from their lives. To still stick around and be there for them. If you love them, you be there for them.
So don't allow your loved ones to suffer in silence. Also, definitely talk with them. let them know how you feel, because it's something. It's the holiday season. It's a time that's supposed to be cheerful and joyful, but for some people it's not. So what we're talking about is something real that impacts a lot of people. Every year, 41,000 people lose their life to suicide. And if we can only prevent just one of those, then this show, the website, the people that are talking about it will have made a huge impact on that family and those that are touched by that family. So as we think about the holiday season and we're giving thanks, today think about if you're having some tough times or some difficulty, let people know, let someone in your life know, talk about it, but don't keep silent about it, because silence equals compliance, and compliance can be a situation where that person can end up taking their life. Our guest today was Lindsay Doolittle, and her book, Goodnight, Mr. Vincent Van Gogh, which was illustrated by survivors who've lost a loved one to suicide. And she is an advocate. She's working with the Suicide Awareness Survivors Organization here in Missouri, Kansas area, but she also has her own website, Above the Rug, because this is one of the things that tends to be swept underneath the rug. And I want to thank her today for coming and sharing her story so that we can put out that it's, you're not alone. No, don't suffer in silence, but let someone know. We never encounter conversations without our community minute. And it's Thanksgiving, so we all want to look at one thing we're giving thanks for. But I know there's people shopping today at stores. You know, I was at the bank yesterday. And just take a minute. Nothing that you're going to get that's out there for sale today is worth your life for tomorrow. And, you know, just relax, folks. I've been to Black Friday sales where seen people fighting over different things. There's nothing that is that much of a sale that's worth your life or it's worth you getting injured or someone, you know, taking it to a different extreme outside in the parking lot. So be careful as you go out today and tomorrow and shop, but also be aware and be courteous to the people behind the counter, because they've been there all night long. They're working with you and they're trying to go as fast as you can. The lines may be long, but give them a little bit of help, and kindness goes a long way. So for Cowtown Conversations, I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Tune in next week when we'll be talking with Detective Lori Meadows of the Kansas City Police Department on how to keep yourself safe during the holiday season.